I'm Leslie Marshall, a Democrat, joined in with my co-host and partner in crime, as every Wednesday here on the Leslie Marshall Show, Mark Levine, former legislative counsel to Democratic Congressman Barney Frank and the House Judiciary, Homeland Security, and Financial Services Committees. Mark also hosts the Washington-based radio television talk show, The Inside Scoop, and also the Ruckus Caucus on Pacifica Radio, WPFW 89.3 FM in D.C. He frequently appears on TV, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, Fox Biz, and CNBC. He's tangled with Bill O'Reilly on the right and his Pacifica co-host on the left. More than a pleasure, my co-host every hour two, every hump day, here on the program, Mark Levine. Hey, buddy, you feeling a little bruised? Just a bit?
Well, we'll live. We'll live to fight another election. I think this election, in some ways, is overstated. When you look at the red states and blue states, of course, we only lost two states last night that voted for Obama in 2012, and that's Iowa and Colorado. And both those states really are purple states. They voted for George Bush before, so we lost a couple purple states. All the other states we lost were red, and it's not a happy moment. But I am trying to look at the icing, and I do think we'll do well in 2016 under the banner of Hillary Clinton, our nominee.
Well, let's talk about that in a moment, but let's also talk about last night. I wrote a piece for my column in U.S. News and World Report, which is out and comes out every Wednesday, and I'm going to get a lot of Dems angry at me because I felt the, after a game, Mark, whether it's the World Series or, you know, the Super Bowl, the losing team will come up and give a speech, and many times the coach of that team will say, they played a good game or they played a better game than we did. And I really felt that the Republicans played a better game than the Democrats. And when I say that, the Republicans jumped on Ebola and ISIS and spread fear. The Republicans avoided the economy like the plague. And the Republicans, you know, would harp on Obamacare, which we will talk about, immigration. But it was all about the boogeyman in the White House and anybody related to him. And what I saw Democrats doing quite spinelessly, I might add, is distancing themselves from the president, distancing themselves from Obamacare and legislation that they had, in fact, voted for. And rather than fight with facts and not just fight fire with fire, but try and put a fire out, a fire of misinformation coming from the right, they dropped the ball. Republicans got more people to the polls again, and Democrats didn't. No excuse for that. You know, on the show yesterday, you know, Reggie in Decatur, Georgia, he's a regular caller to the show.
Sure.
He's visually impaired. He's blind. Or he said he's visually impaired. I shouldn't say all out blind, but he's visually impaired. He can't drive. He's handicapped. And he has nobody to take him. Can't vote. Hello? I mean, you know, seriously, Democrats want the elderly, the handicapped, the minority groups that can't make it to the polling stations. Hey, they got to know where the hell to vote. And even though there's a phone number, not everybody has a phone and not everybody's going to, you know, call it or know where to call if they don't have a computer or listening to, our, you know, the show here advising them of such or the news. And, you know, send out some buses, gather people up, bring them out to vote. I mean, I'm sorry, Republicans did that. Republicans will pick them up on buses and bring them to picnics to stop them from voting. You know, so why can't, you know, and why shouldn't, you know, Democrats do that? So first of all, want to hear, because you and I may disagree on this. I felt this was this was the Democrats to lose. Now, yes, some people might say, like you just did, they were red states. When you have a state that's red and you're turning it purple and it's gone back to red, you're failing. You failed. And we as Democrats have to stand up and stop making, you know, nicey-nice Pollyanna-esque, you know, comments, in my opinion. We got to stand up and say, how do we get it back to purple? And we can't just count on Republicans screwing up and not passing legislation for the next 2 years, which we will also get to. So, one, let's look at some of these states. New Hampshire. Even though Jeanne Shaheen won, there is, in my opinion, there is no reason that woman should have had such a fight. She should have simply pointed out, Scott Brown is not from New Hampshire. Scott Brown is using the people of New Hampshire for political gain. He'll probably, as Brad Bannon said, run for governor of some seat in Maine in a couple of years. And he's only in New Hampshire trying to make a name for himself because he couldn't keep his job when he was in Massachusetts. And being from New England, and you living close enough there in Virginia, Mark, you know New Englanders hate the fact the rest of the country thinks we're one state. Massachusetts, New Hampshire, two very different states and very different sets of people. And being from Massachusetts, I can tell you that. So So, you know, one, would you agree that in some of these races, although we won, we shouldn't have won by the skin of our teeth? And I think New Hampshire is one such race.
Well, again, Massachusetts is a blue state. New Hampshire is a purple state. New Hampshire also voted for George W. Bush. We did win it. We did eke it out.
But they voted for Bush because the Bush compound is in Maine, and New Hampshire's close enough for getting there different than Maine as well.
New Hampshire was always sort of the one purple outlier. Listen, I mean, we could say we lost Maine too, but Susan Collins is a strong, moderate Republican. Look, I don't want to claim that all was roses last night. Obviously, it was not. Obviously, it wasn't a good night for Democrats. And I do think there are a number of things that the president and others did wrong. I don't know why we didn't talk about the economy more. The fact that unemployment's below 6%, that the stock market's at record highs, that the entire world is in economic collapse precisely because they've been following the ideas that Republicans want to impose here. Cut back on infrastructure, practice austerity, cut taxes on the rich and raise taxes on everybody else. All these things that the Republicans want, they did in Europe. And Europe is undergoing its third recession. It is true that the middle class isn't doing as well in America as they should. That's true. And that's largely, again, because Republicans have been against things like raising the minimum wage or making it easier for kids to go to college. We didn't make those arguments. I mean, I made those arguments in my campaign. I didn't win my primary. But Democrats nationwide did not make those arguments enough. And the irony is, when you look at minimum wage, for example, which was on the ballot in a number of red states, every single state it won, and it wasn't even close. There was like 65-35 or 70-30 all across the nation. So I don't think we got the ideas out. I don't remember President Obama being on TV and giving a press conference before today. For what?
I'm with you. A day after the election and you lose is not the time to give us confidence about the defeat with ISIS and the specifics.
Why didn't you talk about it a month ago?
Amen, brother. Preach it. I am with you on that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about a lot of things. I want to talk about some of the states, gubernatorial, referendums, Obamacare, Mitch McConnell, and more. I'm Leslie Marshall. He's Mark Levine. We co-host Hour 2, midweeks, hump day, every Wednesday here on the Leslie Marshall Show. Pick up the phone and join us. Wide open telephones now for this rest of this hour until Talk Radio News Service joins us at the very end of this hour and going into Hour 3 as well. So pick up the phone and join us now, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Call me. Call us. Talk to us on Twitter. Follow Mark at Mark Levine Talk. Follow me at Leslie Marshall. And that's Levine with an E, L-E-V-I-N-E, not Mark Levin. Also, on Facebook, go to facebook.com/TheLeslieMarshallShow. Like us there. You can FB us, email. Go to our website, LeslieMarshallShow.com. Click on contact and send an email that way. Getting your reaction to the elections. And to some of you who didn't vote, wish you had. We'll be back. Hump Day's Hour 2 as it is today. Had a midterm election yesterday. Democrats got the living bejesus beaten out of their butts, honestly. And not just in senatorial seats. The Republicans so far have 7. We are still waiting on results from a couple of states, and we'll talk about that. I believe, Mark, yours is one of them in Virginia where you are. And we'll also talk about gubernatorial elections. Mark,
we're going to win the race in Virginia.
It's looking that way, and I'm very, very...
Mark Warner's going to be continue to be senator from Virginia.
That's a very good thing because, you know, Virginia is one of those very important states in 2016. So is North Carolina. Let's talk about, would you agree that Kay Hagan didn't do enough? That she was relying too much on the loyalty of past voters, turnout among her base, and in addition to that, the title incumbent above her name?
You know, I don't know. Virginia and North Carolina are, I would argue, sort of mirror images of each other. They're both purple states, but Virginia is a purple state that leans blue, and North Carolina is a purple state that leans red. North Carolina voted for President Obama in 08, didn't vote for him in 2012. They are a slight Republican state, and a slight Republican state in a Republican wave has a hard time staying there. I think Kate Hagan, I don't know that she didn't do what she... I think she tried very hard. I think they had a decent ground game. I can't really complain. I mean, if you want me to complain about people, let's talk about some of the...
No. We'll complain a minute. Let's stick with North Carolina.
When
you hear something funny... We'll go on from North Carolina. Stick with North Carolina for a second. I don't know if you heard this, Mark. I laughed so hard. Somebody said that Chelsea Clinton named her daughter Charlotte because they thought that subliminally that would encourage people in North Carolina to like her mother more and vote for her when the time came in 2016. I kid you not. I shared this with Mark Levine. I mean, Marky Mark Grimaldi, my executive producer. I kid you not. I saw this and I thought, oh my God, how much
that's
Kool-Aid can
crazy.
One drink. Is that crazy? Is that crazy with
that's
a cap?
Crazy talk. That's
crazy
insane.
With a capital K. As in cray cray.
Absolutely insane.
Okay, here's the deal, though. This is a woman who missed a debate on television, statewide television. This is a woman who missed meetings with regard to decisions on, military committees when it's a huge, huge, huge military state. Big, big, big screw-ups there.
Well, she shouldn't miss a debate. As far as missing meetings, the dirty little secret as someone who's worked in Congress is that all members of Congress, all 535 members of Congress, are overbooked. They actually have several hearings they schedule at the same time, and you cannot possibly attend them all. That's why they send staffers like me to take notes and tell them all that they're doing. Yes, you should attend the more important ones, but that, I think, is just so much political theater. She shouldn't miss a debate. I'll grant you that one. She definitely shouldn't do that.
Okay, let's talk about, I said, people that, were bad or didn't do well or things were going to say bad, people were going to say bad things about. Go ahead, your turn.
Well, Maryland and Massachusetts are the two that come to mind, two extremely weak candidates. Martha Coakley of Massachusetts, you remember, is the same one who lost the senatorial race to Scott Brown.
And this is a woman who she phones it in, man. She does not bust her ass. You want this job, go bust your ass.
She famously said in her senatorial race, when asked why they didn't see her at Red Sox games, she said, "Do you want me to be outside in 20-degree weather at Fenway Park shaking hands?" The answer, of course, is yes.
Yes. Yes.
And who?
Because you're going to be, if you win, out there in 20-degree weather throwing out the ball on game day for the Sox. We will be back, Mark. We got to take a break, sweetie. Don't go away. Mark's going to be with me not just this hour, but next hour. I'm very happy. My hump day date. I have a terrible Oh, Mark would laugh, though. I'm going to say it. My hump day date with my favorite homo. No, I'm sorry, bad. I'm bad. I'm bad. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back. Mark, we were talking about bads, and you were talking about Martha Coakley. Listen, I'm from Massachusetts. You're from, I know, Nashville, Tennessee, but close enough living in Virginia. When a blue state goes red, or votes for somebody red, it's typically because the red person isn't so red, much like a Susan Collins in Maine. They're very moderate Republican, and they're a better candidate, stronger candidate than the Democrats put forth. Do you think that's the case? In other words, would a stronger Democrat, an Elizabeth Warren type in Massachusetts, for example, have won the D.C. and kept Massachusetts blue?
Well, sure. If Elizabeth Warren ran for governor of Massachusetts, she'd win in a heartbeat. Martha Coakley is an exceedingly weak candidate. I don't know her personally, but I would advise her to, do something else with her life. This is not something that she should be doing. She's just not a strong candidate. I don't know what else to say. I do think, though, that some of this is overblown. It was a particularly bad year with the states that it was. Again, we only lost in terms of the Senate race. We didn't lose a single blue state. There's 20 states that are solid blue, always blue. We didn't lose a single one of those. We lost two purple states. If you want to count North Carolina, fine, we lost three. We hung on to two other purple states, New Hampshire
Let's talk about what this is, because we need to, instead of going, well, it's not as bad. No, it was bad. Let's just say it was bad. We are blue and purple today from bruises, man. I mean, it is bad. Let's call it what it is. Gubernatorial elections, Mark. Okay. Historically, yes, you have seats in the House and the Senate, and the elections reflect the attitude toward the president, which he has a very low approval rating. But let's talk about what the message was here in Kentucky. Many would say that people didn't really like Mitch McConnell. They just disliked Obama more than McConnell. Is that the case across the board and even in the gubernatorial elections? Who is this a referendum on? Is it Obama? Is it his policies?
No.
Is it Democrats? Because it's certainly not Obamacare, and we'll get to Obamacare in a minute.
If you want to argue the House and Senate races were in some ways a referendum on President Obama, I can't deny it. When it comes to congressional elections, whether or not you like the president is definitely part of it. The six-year itch, most presidents, every president, virtually everyone, has lost in their 6 year of their presidency. But when it comes to gubernatorial races, I think you'll find there are local issues. And there's a reason why you might find a very red state with a blue governor. Catherine Sebelius was a governor of Kansas, and there have been Republican governors of Massachusetts. Now, I assure you, a Republican governor of Massachusetts is far more liberal than, say, Janet Napolitano when she was the Democratic governor of Arizona. So governors tend to take on their states. A lot of people see it as a balance. You know, Massachusetts legislature is Democratic, so they want a Republican governor. Same is true in Maryland. I do think that when it comes to the House races and the Senate races, that was more referendum on President Obama. But again, the Senate candidates did better than Obama did in those states in 2012. When you think about it, Kentucky was some 14 points for Romney and maybe 7 or 8 points for McConnell. So it was definitely an uphill battle, and that's just due to the weirdness of the Senate. The one-third of the states that happened to run this year are more red. We are going to do much better in 2016. I
will talk about 2016. I love you. You're getting far ahead of me. You're dancing way too fast. Stop.
Okay.
So let's talk about Kentucky. I do want to give Mitch McConnell one piece of credit, that he gave such credit to his opponent, and he should, because he was in a tight race there for a long time. You know, here she is, a woman and a liberal Democrat and an extremely red seat with a lifelong politician and incumbent in that state who's bought tons of money and jobs back to that state historically for years. And in a state where, dare I say, they definitely don't look at a woman as being their senator as much as a man. Sorry, I really think that's a breakdown. A lot of women, you know, don't feel as comfortable with women in power in certain states, red states, southern states like Kentucky. And I have to say I was glad that he did that. However, I was angry at the press, which everybody says is so liberal. I just said this to Marky Mark off the air. You know, Mitch McConnell said today that he's willing to work with the president to get things done. That he and the president agreed. These are all the lovely sound bites and speeches and, you know, kumbaya moments that come the day after an election.
Yeah, they'll be gone
right?
in a week.
Right. But on September 12, 2012, on 60 Minutes, it was recorded then, aired on September 23rd, the president reflected on something that Mitch McConnell had said. And Mitch McConnell said, quote, "It was his number one goal to make sure that President Obama was a one-term president." And my question to him would be to remind him of that based on what he was saying today. And was he lying then or is he lying now? What do you think, Mark?
He's lying now.
Okay.
Of course he's lying now. He, you know, at the time he said, "I'm going to make President Obama a one-term president," the presidency was a week old. I mean, he was determined from the get-go to make government dysfunctional. And when you think about the difficulties between the Democrats trying to make government function and the Republicans trying to make government not function, it's a lot easier to stop something than to start something. It's a lot easier to break something than to make it work. Imagine somebody's trying to build a car and someone's trying to destroy that car. Well, it's much easier to destroy the car than it is to build the car. And the way our government works is you generally need a president and both houses of Congress working together to get anything accomplished. So Republicans bet on dysfunction. They bet on being the party of no. They proved that, and really they couldn't stop Obama until 2010, but I said back in 2010, you elect Republicans, you're basically saying you don't want any government to function. And the American people elected the Republicans, and no government has functioned. And I guarantee you that the gridlock that we've had for the past 4 years will get worse in the next 2 years. And if you want dysfunction, and you want a bad Congress, and you want it not to work, then be happy you voted for Republicans. We will not have a functional government in the past 2 months. All of this, yeah, we'll work together. Politicians say that. It won't last 2 weeks.
Okay,
sorry.
Let's take some calls. I'm a fellow pessimist. I'm digging the pessimism here. But let's go to New York Line 2 with Boris. Boris, good afternoon and welcome. What do you have to say, dear?
Hi, Leslie. Good to be on your show again. So I agree with what Mark just said. I think everybody understands that this is just you know, the road to 2016. I was watching already Chris Christie yesterday. All they were talking to him about, asking him about on CNN, was is he running, and Scott Walker is now positioning himself, and you already see that tension with Chris.
And Boris, I'm glad you brought that up. Guys, is anybody angry, because I am, that Scott Walker's opponent and challenger didn't bring up, he's not going to be here for you. He's not going to be here for the state of Wisconsin. He's not going to be here for the people of Wisconsin. He's just doing this until he runs for president. Do you want a governor? Are you voting for somebody for 4 years or 2 years? Are you voting for somebody for one? And, you know, why aren't people banging that kind of a drum? Boris?
Yeah. I mean, Leslie, I guess you could probably, with our back and forth the several times I call, I think you could see that we probably would agree on a range of policy issues, including, I guess, even with Walker. But I think that, you know, it's interesting to see how everybody, and like everybody's already positioning, even Rand Paul, all he was talking about was Hillary Clinton yesterday. He didn't even say Obama once in all of the interviews that I saw him talk about. So we already know where he's headed. Ted Cruz, I mean, he's basically, it was just surreal to watch all of these exchanges, and to this sort of adds to what Mark was just saying, where we already know how this is going to play out, not only 2 years in advance, they were probably already know it's going to play out for 4 years in advance. This is, this kind of yo-yo pendulum swing of gridlocked, divided government, but, you know, that's, and I've tweeted to you many times, that's the big problem with the way that our system was, the structure was created. It was not created for party politics. It was created precisely because the founders were naive enough to believe that there wouldn't be party politics in this country, which I don't know why they had that idea, but that's
but,
the way
but you know what? It did used to work. I mean, just to be fair, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill did strike deals together. And I think they did so knowing that both were popular, neither really feared their jobs. Tip O'Neill was as ensconced as could be, and at that time the Democrats had held the House for 40 years. Ronald Reagan was a very popular president, and they weren't looking over their shoulders, and they got some deals accomplished. I don't think it's impossible. I think with today's Republican Party it's impossible. But the Republican Party of Bob Dole and Howard Baker and these names, they sound like dinosaurs. But I remember, I'm old enough to remember 20 years ago when Republicans and Democrats did work together prior to the rise of the Newt Gingrich, burn all the bridges, destroy the Democrats kind of Republican Party. And I just wish President Obama would call them on their BS and not pretend that what they say has any reality. But, you know, like I said, I lost my election, so what do I know?
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. Mark Levine staying with me into the next hour after this. Hey, live from the White House, who was present at the White House press conference with the president, William McDonald from TRNS. Joining me also is my co-host, Mark Levine, every hour two and three today on Hump Days. William, good afternoon. Tell us the latest. We did carry it live in its entirety, but of course, in commercial breaks, we missed some Q&A. So tell us your take from TRNS there live at the White House, and welcome. And Mark, feel free to jump in as well.
Oh, thank you so much. It was actually probably one of his more toned-down responses to a midterm. Remember in 2010 when he came out and he referred to it as a shellacking? This time he really had hope that the GOP-controlled House and Senate are going to be able to work with the White House. But he also did say that there will be things that he wants to initiate that the two chambers are not going to agree on, and that if necessary, he will take executive actions as he has before if the Congress is not able to proceed on different issues that need to be addressed.
William, I saw the press conference, at least a good part of it, and it seemed to me the president was quite subdued. And he seems to have been subdued for the past year or so. I remember President Obama right after his election or before his election when he was fired up, getting ready to go and going from place to place and talking about his policies. We really haven't heard much from the president, it seems, defending his presidency in the last year. Is that fair?
I think that is a fair assessment. Something that all presidents, kind of the last 2 years of their term, I think, kind of need to tone it down a little bit because of the hopes that they can continue on to their party taking the White House in 2 years. So by him, not really coming out, hitting hard, kind of toning it down, like you had said, I think this gives the Democrats the opportunity to kind of shape the message going forward in a less restrictive manner than, let's say, the last 6 years have been?
He talked a little bit about Mitch McConnell, saying he wanted to work with him. What was not mentioned was Mitch McConnell's famous statement about a week after President Obama became president in 2009, saying that his primary goal was to make sure President Obama was defeated and really didn't have a positive forward agenda. I'm curious whether this is all political theater in everyone's mind. I mean, the president pretending to want to work with a man who's famously said that under no circumstances will he work with the president, and how much of this is reality?
Well, Mitch McConnell has now, he has had the luxury of being a little more loose in his words than before. He is now going to be voted as the leader of the Senate. So he's going to have to take more responsibility for the way he discusses legislation, the way he implements legislation within the Senate, and what he is bringing to the forefront. And I think he realizes that this is a new responsibility. He can't just come out and say certain things about how he wants the president to not succeed or different policies. I do think that in the next 2 years, especially with the Affordable Care Act, that we're not going to see 50 votes coming out of the House. We're not going to see the attacks that have been so strong against the Affordable Care Act like we have in the last couple, basically 4 years. I think they're going to tone it down. They're going to find different ways.
Let me ask you this, William. Let me cut to the chase. What realistically can be accomplished with this Congress, the newly elected Congress, and President Obama, and not the lame duck, because a lot of times things get done in the lame duck. But
right.
But once this new Congress sits in January, what can realistically be accomplished in the next 2 years?
Well, it could be an opportunity to really actually get some things done. To be honest,
yes, I'm waiting.
I'm grasping at straws here. Considering the last 4 years, I don't have a whole lot of hope that a lot could get done. Something that I think Republicans need to really start paying attention to is that I think it was Alaska has joined Colorado and Washington, as well as D.C., in legalizing marijuana.
Right.
And also,
I don't think the Republicans are going to take that as their issue at all. Other than Rand Paul.
They're going to have to listen to the electorate on that. Between that, marriage equality, and immigration, if they don't act appropriately on that and start talking about minorities and women differently, say goodbye to 2016, and I think they know that now that they hold both chambers, if they don't behave a little more clearly and start, a real constructive dialogue, they could lose not just the presidency, but both chambers come 2016.
William, let me make my prediction. My prediction is the Republicans will use these 2 years to investigate everything they can find, to look for anything that some volunteer for the Obama campaign once saw a legal prostitute. Boom, that's what they're going to be their focus.
William, and I want you to weigh in as well. But Mark, Mitch McConnell, like you said, today is all about the lies. Honestly, there are a few things. One, it would behoove Republicans to pass immigration reform in a way the president wouldn't like and wouldn't sign, and then they can say, we tried, and they may gain some actually Latino voters from that, don't you think?
I think that if that
is
the case.
Wait, we'll let William weigh in real quick.
Okay. I think that if that is the case, the White House is going to shape it as to why this is not done, and in that case, he'll take executive actions on. Let's say they bring up an immigration bill that has something to do with taking away, a pre-existing condition, okay? They put something like that in there. Obama says absolutely not, vetoes it, and the Republicans turn around and say, okay, we tried immigration reform. The White House and all the Democrats are going to say, no, you didn't. It was a Trojan horse to once again try to destroy the Affordable Care Act. If the Democrats can hit and hit and hit over the next 2 years, the irresponsibility that the Republicans are trying to once again attack these policies on the Affordable Care Act, that they're going to succeed in messaging. I really do think that. But whatever he's going to veto, which he has been very conservative in doing.
Right, only two vetoes in 6 years, yeah.
Yeah, which is quite amazing. Honestly.
Yeah, it really is. That I would agree. We will be back. William, thank you for joining us. William McDonough, live from our nation's capital, Talk Radio News Service. Mark Levine joins me next hour, hour three. We hope you will too. 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543 is the number. Don't go away. Election day, those of you on the right, Republicans very happy. Numerous seats gained in the House. Largest House majority in many years for Republicans. And although right now seven seats picked up, we're looking at a couple. Virginia's looking to go Democrat. Alaska, perhaps Republican. We will see. Some say this is a landslide when you factor in the gubernatorial elections and seats won and the seats won in the House. But is it a landslide and does it matter? Was this a referendum on President Barack Obama, on the Affordable Care Act, on immigration, or the lack of things being done with immigration? Or was this just a matter of numbers? Republicans showed up, Democrats didn't. Hi, good afternoon. Happy Wednesday. Happy hump day. Pick up the phone and join us in this and every hour. Wide open telephones here on the only true democracy in talk radio of, for, and by you. Live on the radio nationwide, streaming live throughout the world on the World Wide Web. Go to LeslieMarshallShow.com/stream. Keep in mind, we stream live when we broadcast live Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. We're also carried on every military base on the American Armed Forces Radio Network, on the Progressive Voices Network, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and in addition to that, Indiana Talks, Pittsburgh Talks, and Houston Talks all.com. In this hour, we want to hear from you, 888-6-LESLIE, 888-653-7543. Mark Levine and I will take your tweets, incorporate them in the hour. Follow me on Twitter, at Leslie Marshall. Follow Mark at Mark Levine Talk. Facebook, like our fan page, facebook.com/TheLeslieMarshallShow to FBS. Emails, go to our website, LeslieMarshallShow.com. Click on contact. And keep in mind, you can get this show via podcast free. Go to Spreaker and sign up today to follow me there. Spreaker, SPREAKER.com/LeslieMarshall. Well, Mark, another day, another hour. We have another date into the third hour. Let's talk about the history that was made this midterm election. And really, it was not just history for Republicans. I have to say, as a chick, we had two women in West Virginia competing. It was a victorious day for women. Even though she's a Republican, I like the Spitfire Mia in Utah. I just wish she were a Democrat. And Jody Ernst scares me. But women. And not necessarily women showing up at the polls, but women running, women defeating men. I am happy about that, although I prefer them to be Democrats defeating Republicans. And let's talk about that. When we look at the number of women who came out and supported various female candidates, whether Democrat or Republican, when a woman was running against a man, it used to be 40-some percent, you know, of the female vote went to this person. Now, especially among female Democrats, we are seeing numbers like 52%, 57%. So I think what we're seeing is that women are definitely voting for women, and women are definitely voting they're voting for their gender with regard to their gender first, as opposed to their party. And I say that because there are Republican women that voted for Democratic women, and I think largely because of the war on women and women's issues.
I don't know. I think actually we've reached a new point. I think there's 100 women now in the House of Representatives, which is a milestone. It's not half, but it's a quarter or so. I think we've come to the point where the gender isn't what people even talk about anymore. I mean, we just now talked about Elizabeth Warren being a great candidate and Martha Coakley being a terrible candidate. They're both from Massachusetts. Neither one of us mentioned that they're women, because I don't think it matters that much. I think, yeah, like you said, in West Virginia, a Republican woman beat a Democratic woman. Jody Ernst scares me. Michelle Bachmann scares me.
Talk about why Jody Ernst scares you.
It's not because she castrates pigs. I want to be very clear about that. Jody Ertz scares me because she...
Or brags about castrating pigs.
Yes, she did brag about that. She comes from the impeach Obama, take no prisoners, destroy the government, shut it down, make sure America can't work school of the Republican Party. Like I said, the Howard Bakers and Bob Doles don't exist anymore. What we have is a Republican... They're determined to make the government fail, not to work with Democrats to make it succeed. They're determined. They want failure. And as I said, it's easier to blow up a car than to build a car. And she is from that school. Now, I don't say all Republicans are. We mentioned Susan Collins. She's certainly a moderate Democrat, a moderate Republican that works across the aisle to make things happen. Even John McCain, who I certainly think was an inferior candidate to Barack Obama and definitely has anger issues, is the kind of guy who works across the aisle, old schooler, to try to get things done. Jody Ernst is absolutely a bomb thrower. She's not a legislator, and I suspect she'll take that role. And mark my words, in 6 years, she'll be out, and Iowa will elect a Democrat in her place.
I hope you are right. That's a long way away. We're going to talk 2016 first. But let's talk to somebody I've mentioned to you who called yesterday. Oh, actually, first we're going to go to Dave in Humboldt County on line two. Dave, good afternoon. Welcome. What's your reaction, and what did you want to talk about with specifics in regard to what happened after the midterm elections yesterday?
Leslie and Mark and I go back a long time, and I think we do.
You'll
recall that I, at the risk of being thought a tinfoil hat type, have long had real questions as to how much faith we can have in our whole electronic voting system. We're the only country in the civilized world that still uses electronic voting, and you may recall, Mark, when Bev Harris demonstrated right before our eyes how you could flip any number of votes. She proved that she could get Tiger Woods elected governor of Texas just by flipping how many millions of votes. And you may recall that there were some little precincts with 200, 250 registered voters, most of them Democrats, and that same little precinct delivered 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 votes to Bush. This was... now, what, 10 years ago? But anyway, it's left me with some serious questions in my mind. How much faith can we have in this electronic voting?
Well, Dave, you know I've long agreed with you. I don't trust electronic voting. There has been a move to paper systems in some states. For example, where I live in Virginia, we moved from electronic to paper systems. I'm glad to hear that. It hasn't gone near far enough. And to me, the unwritten story that almost no one's talking about is how, for example, in Georgia, they just removed 40,000 Democrats from the rolls. They showed up to vote, and they said, sorry, you can't vote. We have massive electoral shenanigans going on. And it does make you wonder about some of the close races. I mean, Kate Hagan was ahead in the exit polls. These are not the pre-election polls. These are in the exit polls. And North Carolina, like Virginia and a lot of Republican states, is requiring voter IDs purposely to disenfranchise hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of voters. Perhaps the most famous example is in Texas, where a former Speaker of the House, Jim Wright, now 91, didn't have a driver's license. The former Speaker of the House was not allowed to vote in Texas because his driver's license had expired. I mean, we make it very, very – I shouldn't say we. The Republicans make it very difficult for minorities, for young people, for the elderly to vote because they want to try to depress Democratic votes. And, Dave, I always support you in pointing out these issues because every American should vote. Now, I'm still mad at Democrats who stayed home. There's no excuse for that. But for people who wanted to vote and weren't allowed to vote, I'm even more angry.
Because
no,
when you look at some states, even though Kay Hagan, I thought, could have done a much better job, in North Carolina, it was a 1.7% margin. Now, that's 48,000 votes, right? And, you know, a lot of it, you know, by the end of the day, is this really crossover votes or independent and centrist based on the breakdowns you've seen, Mark? Or is this just Republicans came out en masse yesterday?
I think in North Carolina, it was within the margin of cheating. I really do. I mean, North Carolina has this strict election laws put forward by Republican government.
And we can't deny Tom Tillis beat Senator Kay Hagan. Tom Tillis also, with one of the harshest new election laws in the United States, helped to craft that in North Carolina.
That's exactly right.
He crafted something that he knew would benefit him.
And then he won. It's, you know, it's very, very easy to win an election when you don't.
Right. And let's just break. Mark, sorry to interrupt. And I just want people to know what happened in North Carolina. The law that was so harsh, it slashed seven early voting days. It eliminated same day registration. It prohibited voting outside a voter's home precinct. All forms of voting that are especially popular statistically among African Americans. Now, it's too early to assess, obviously, the impact of that law this year. But there are reports from Election Protection Hotline and other voter protection volunteers that appears to be widespread problems, both with voter registrations and with voters being told they were in the wrong precinct yesterday. Some numbers from recent elections suggest that the magnitude of the problem may not be far from the margin of victory. In 2010, 200,000 voters cast ballots during the early voting days. That was now cut. And that was according to a recent court decision. And in 2012, 700,000 voted during those days, including more than a quarter of all African Americans voted that year, all of them in that state. And in 2012, 100,000 North Carolinians, also almost a third of them African American, voted using same-day registration that was not available this year. 7,500 voters cast their ballots outside of their home precincts that year. If you look at that and even take the mean average of that, it comes out to about, what, 48,000? So, I mean, Mark, would you agree that in North Carolina, Tom Tillis put this into place knowing it would benefit him and knowing it would make it much more difficult with voting patterns of African Americans for African Americans to come out and to vote for Senator Kay Hagan, if, in fact, they were going to come out?
And his legislature, in his assembly in North Carolina, had not purposely sought out to disenfranchise Democratic voters, he would not have won this election. You know, Democrats believe you should win elections by getting the majority of the voters. Republicans believe you should win elections by disqualifying a decent number of the opposing party's voters. I think that's undemocratic. I'm willing to say so loudly and clearly. It's the kind of thing writ small that dictators do writ large. It is un-American. And what they did, when you tell an American citizen born in the United States of America that you can't vote because you haven't jumped through these six hoops that they designed.
Or because you're at work instead of home, or because you're at work instead of home, or you used to vote down the street and now only your neighbors on this side of that sign do, and you're going to vote over there, and you only have this 30-minute or one-hour period before you go to work, and you can't make it over there. Ridiculous. We're going to take a break. When we come back, you know what happened? I went to vote. I checked if my husband's name was there. They said no. I don't need to show proof in California. I went and voted. I gave them my name and address. My husband lives with me. They said he can come back here and vote. Unfortunately, my husband was operating and couldn't get to vote. Didn't make a big difference in California, where we are a true blue state. And actually, even though I'm from the East Coast and I'm from Massachusetts, I'm angry at my homeboys and girls today, especially those that stayed home. I'm angry at the candidate they put forth, Martha Coakley, and I'm happy to be part of the great state of California. I've always said I was passing through here, but maybe it's more home than I know, because I like it blue. Red may be my favorite color, but not on a map. We'll be back. Mark Levine is my co-host. Back to your calls. And when we come back, did we keep Dave? Did Dave have more to say? He's all set. We're done with him. Thank you for your call there, Dave in Humboldt County. I'm Leslie Marshall. Back to you, your calls. And Mark Levine, my co-host in this hour, right after these quick words. Don't go away. He is Mark Levine, and we're talking about post-midterm election chat here on the Only True Democracy and Talk Radio. Mark, let's take some more calls, and we'll talk more about how the numbers panned out yesterday. Let's go next to Sebastian in New York, line 4. I like you already. That's my son's name. Hi, Sebastian. Good afternoon.
Hi, Leslie. How are you tonight?
Good, good. How you doing?
I'll tell you. Okay, thank you.
Sebastian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Leslie. I'm sorry.
Okay, great. No worries. What's your comment? Mark Levine is here with me as well.
Oh, I just want to say I love Mark Levine. I love you.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
One question I have is, you know, your views on voter ID, you know, nationally.
I personally have a problem with the voter ID laws that I have seen in various states like Texas, because statistics show, and a Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg spoke to and referenced, that African Americans, elderly, homeless people, vets, Hispanics, single moms, that segment of the population who normally overwhelmingly vote Democrat are affected. If we want to have a national ID in this country and, you know, take a year or two to incorporate that, because they have this fear that is not founded on anything but, BS and paranoia that illegals are voting. That's something I would be open to down the road. But to require somebody now, when we do not have a national ID program, to put forth an ID to vote, I don't agree with it. Mark?
Let me tell you a story about my campaign. As listeners know, I ran for Congress this year, lost in the Democratic primary in June. I had a campaign worker work for me, worked very hard. He was a young man, happened to be African-American, 22 years old, and he's been living from place to place, okay? He's a poor guy. He doesn't have a lot of money, but he worked very hard for me, so I owe him money. I owe him $700. I wrote him a check for it back in May. He has not cashed my check. I can't close my campaign because he hasn't cashed my check. He hasn't cashed my check because he doesn't have a picture ID. I tried to help him get a picture ID. He can't get a picture ID because he doesn't have a copy of his birth certificate. To get a copy of his birth certificate, he needs to supply them with a picture ID. Now, this young man was born in the United States of America. He's lived here his entire life. He will never have a chance to vote his entire life, and he won't even have a chance to legally work, because even though he has a Social Security number, he doesn't have a picture ID, and he can't get his Social Security card from the Social Security Administration. This is the reality of what goes on in America. I actually wanted to pay him in cash. My lawyers told me I couldn't, and we're in a bind because I can't get this man legally an ID. That's how hard it is, and I'm a lawyer. I ran for Congress. Of all people who should be able to get him an ID, I should be able to.
And you got connections, and you got connections, and you're in that beltway.
I do, and I've been calling my connections. I'm still working on it. I hope to get this young man an ID. I want to pay him for the work he did. It's been, 4 or 5 months since the campaign? I'm still working on it, and that's dedicated work on my part. Imagine all the hundreds of thousands, millions of Americans that don't have an ID. They don't have a driver's license.
Wow.
That's the reality we live in.
Sebastian?
No, I agree. I'm not saying an overnight solution. It's like Obamacare for me. You're not going to solve these problems overnight, but you can't ram things through overnight either and hope, you know, that you're forcibly going to change, you know, and make everything better. There's going to be a lot of pain there. I think with voter ID, general picture ID for every American citizen would be great.
Just provide it, Sebastian. That's the thing. Republicans say they want to prevent fraud. Okay, easy answer. Every single person that walks in the voting booth, what do? Before they vote, you take their picture, you get their name, and you have them sign, get their thumbprint for all I care, and have them sign they are who they say they are. And if they're not, throw them in jail for 5 years. I'm fine with that. No problem with that at all. And then everyone has an ID, and everyone can vote. Republicans don't want to stop voter fraud. They want to stop.
I'm Leslie Marshall. He's back as well. And joining me in this hour, not just last hour, Mark Levine is my co-host, Hour 2, every Wednesday, hump day. And today is one day post-election, midterm election. Mark, let's take some more calls. Sound good?
Sure.
Let's go to Indiana on line 4 with Darren. Hi, Darren. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. What's your take on the outcome of the midterm elections?
Hi, Ms. Marshall, and thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us.
My take... Right, there's a little delay here. Yeah, my take is that what we're seeing today at the press conference is basically trial balloons from the two titans, McConnell and President Obama. They're trying to basically measure each other up, see what's going to happen here in the next few months. I like what I see. It's election... midterm election was a total repudiation of the Democrat agenda.
Well, now, let me ask you, Darren, what do you view to be the Democratic agenda? I say that because these are nice catchphrases, but I want to know what you really view the Democratic agenda to be.
All right. What I know the Democratic agenda is gun control.
Which, by the way, Darren, The majority of Americans, yep, including Republicans, agree with universal background checks, and that was a measure that was passed by both Democrats and Republicans in the state of Washington yesterday.
Well, I disagree. Okay.
So you're not in favor of background checks at gun shows, as an example?
No.
Why?
Because that is between two individuals. Okay.
Well, if I go into a store to buy a gun, I have to have a background check. What's the difference in that store versus the gun show, and that the two individuals between me and that person or the person at the gun show? What's the difference?
Now, that's between you and a merchant. Okay, he's just establishing business. But between two private individuals, that's just, government should just stay out of business.
So you're okay if kids who don't really have to, produce an accurate form of identification and there's no background check to, cross-reference, their age, you're okay with convicted felons, you're okay with people with mental illness walking into a gun show and buying arsenal.
How about terrorists? How about ISIS?
Yeah, how about terror? Yeah, how about terrorists? Yeah.
No. Okay. I can see where you're going with this.
We're just asking. Yeah. Since, many people on the right think that everybody's Muslim is a terrorist. What about these guys like the shooter at Fort Hood? Well, he's in the military, a bit different. He had access to guns. But what about some of these other people deciding they want to take heads off, they want to take numerous lives at once, and going into the gun show? Great point, Mark. And purchasing a few guns.
I can resolve this. Everyone should be packing guns. All right. There'd be more respect. Now, if a terrorist or a criminal got a hold of a gun, there would be people that would be able to defend each other in that case.
You know what? Let me tell you a true story, Darren, in which would refute that example. You may remember this. It made the national news. I live in Los Angeles, California. And a few years ago, there was outrage among Los Angeles County citizens when the police department of the city of Los Angeles was outgunned, not outmanned, weaponry-wise, by bank robbers. Mark Levine, do you remember this? This footage?
Oh, absolutely.
This was in Northridge, California. Right, Northridge, California, the epicenter of one of our
automatic weapons, and they basically, two people took on a whole police force.
Exactly. And hurt people and killed, police officer in the process.
Absolutely.
So my question to you is, Darren, what good is everybody being armed if we're not armed equally? For example, I'm not going to carry in my purse an AK-47, but I would imagine a terrorist just might.
Or what about when they go into a kindergarten and start shooting people? Do we need to arm those 5-year-olds too so that they can get the guy back in the crossfire?
Yeah, because a teacher with that one pistol that she's putting in her stockings or that strap to her calf isn't going to defend 30 to 40 screaming preschoolers.
And if she keeps it in her drawer, a kid might just take it and look at it. They're 6. They like to explore. They're curious.
Right. And shoot themselves, teacher, or the entire classroom. What about that, Darren?
Wow. That does give you something to think about. I agree.
You know what, Darren? I love the fact that you admit you haven't thought it through.
Yeah, I appreciate you're going to think about it, Darren.
And that he thought about it, right.
I appreciate that. But
yeah. Okay, so go ahead. So you think the Democratic agenda is gun control. I would say it is part of the belief of most Democrats. Mark, I think that we would agree that we need to reduce the type of weaponry and the ease at which some who shouldn't have access to these guns. But Mark and I both agree, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't want to take away your Second Amendment
right
on guns. So
I wouldn't call it gun control so much as reasonable gun violence regulation to make sure that only law-abiding people have guns and not terrorists and the mentally ill and convicted felons.
And we want to make sure that gun owners are responsible. And I think that's something that's shared by everyone. That's something the NRA has a mantra about, right? Gun responsibility with ownership.
Well, then would we all agree that what the Germany did in 1938 in seizing people's arms was wrong, and that's what we both don't want to see done.
Darren, being somebody, Mark is Jewish, I'm half Jewish, I've lost relatives in the Holocaust, I assume he has as well.
Yes.
And
okay.
I have to tell you, from survivors in not just my family who are now gone, but other survivors I've met throughout my life. I used to live in Miami, Florida at the beginning of my talk show career. A lot of Jewish survivors with numbers on their arms. And because of the hot weather, you could see those unless women would try and hide them with cuffed bracelets, as they often did. And every single person I ever saw with a number, I would ask a few questions. And one of which was, why didn't you fight back? Because one of the things that you have to see, just numbers wise, is you would have one armed soldier to sometimes 2,000 to 3,000 people, sometimes at the end especially. And they were just so afraid. You know what? Most of these people didn't own guns. This was not their way or a part of their culture. So taking away the guns from the people, I really don't think it would have changed the ultimate goal and outcome, unfortunately, of that madman Adolf Hitler. Because remember, the soldiers state that they were just following orders, and the anti-Semitism was shared by many of the Germans, Austrians, Poles, and still is, by the way, largely to this day. Mark, can you speak to that? Because I think you might agree with me. Even if you had, you know, one person and you had a soldier come into the house, I mean, these guys had tanks. I'm sorry, a few handguns or even rifles was not going to win over the Nazis.
I really hate this analogy for several reasons. One, I think it's a bit offensive as an American to suggest that our democracy, for all its imperfections, and God knows Leslie and I talk about its imperfections all the time, is somehow going to turn into Nazi Germany. I really think that we've withstood democracy for 200 plus years. I think we'll be okay. But to your point,
very good point, Darren. Nobody in the United States is or has ever proposed coming to people's homes and taking their guns away.
Exactly.
No. What we're talking about is legislation to make sure if you are a legal, law-abiding citizen who wants to buy a gun, then you have nothing to hide. So why should you be hiding it?
But the other thing is, I want to make this point clear. If the government wants to take you, okay, if you are a bad guy, some people say, well, I need 100 bullets in my gun because what if 100 people are all trying to shoot me at once? And I say, if 100 people are all trying to shoot you at once, probably you're the bad guy. And the SEAL Team 6 that's out to get you is the good guys, and I want them to shoot you because you're probably one of these crazy terrorists like the bank robbers in California. So I want the government to outgun you, and you know what? They do. I don't care how many guns you buy. The government has 10. Tanks, they have nuclear weapons, they have airplanes. At the end of the day, you can't win a war against the American military, and I'm glad you can't, because our military is controlled by a democratic system.
Well,
Darren?
having the right to bear arms protects your First Amendment right, the freedom of press, freedom of religion, and freedom of
speech. I don't have a gun, and I speak all the time. No one's a bigger loudmouth than Mark Levine, and I don't have a gun, and I still speak everywhere I can. I don't need a gun to protect my free speech. I have a police officer. If I have trouble, I can call the police.
Right. Right. And I think that if the Jewish people, say in the 1938 of Germany, if they had arms then,
they would have died.
They still would have died.
They
still would have died. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, the Warsaw Uprising is an example and speaks to your point, Darren, since we're going down this road. And one of my relatives was part of that uprising. And the Warsaw Uprising, the Jewish people, part of the resistance against the Nazis, were armed. And they held the Nazis at bay for 6 days, and then they lost because the Nazis not only had more people, they had more weaponry. And then, you know, when they started to have tanks and throw, you know, bombs and other grenades and things like that down into the underground where these people were, they had no choice but for those who survived to surrender.
And then they were massacred.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Darren, thank you for that, and appreciate it. Call us again, Darren, Indiana. You know, see, this is an equal opportunity talk show. We'll be back with more callers. Mark Levine is my co-host here on The Only True Democracy in Talk Radio. Quick break, back to you. So he's Mark Levine, and we are back. Welcome back. Only True Democracy in Talk Radio of for and by you, the people. Mark, let's take some more calls. Sound good?
Yep.
Let's go to line 4. Lisa is in Illinois. Lisa, good afternoon.
Hi.
What's your reaction to the outcome of the midterm elections from yesterday?
Well, I'm not happy in Illinois. It even sucks worse.
Yep.
Yeah. What happened in Illinois? What happened? People didn't like Pat Quinn?
Well, he was kind of he was contentious, even with a Democratic legislature. I mean, they've had supermajority in the legislature, and it still is. So good luck with Rahner in trying to do anything.
What happened in the state of Illinois as somebody from that state, do you feel, Lisa?
What I think, personally, that Rahner pandered to the minority base, and particularly on the south side of Chicago. And they fell for his pandering. I don't need to go any further than that. But that's exactly what hurt. And let's face it, he is a billionaire. He put lots of his own money into the election. He became a billionaire by starting his businesses. Then he failed. He has one of his former companies is in a major suit down in Florida. He's not personally named, but it's one of his former companies that he was part of. He was on the board. He started the company.
So did this information come out? Did people from Illinois not hear it? Did Democrats
out and vote? There was a bunch of low information voters in Illinois.
Why?
Because they don't do their research. I research every candidate that's on the ballot in Illinois. I do that.
Think this speaks to Republicans having larger and more effective messages and messaging campaigns than Republicans, Lisa, for you in your state?
While Cook County and the city of Chicago are notoriously Democratic, okay? They have been for decades. But Quinn was losing Cook County because of the suburban areas. Now, I live in a suburb of Chicago, Cook County, but hell in no way would I ever vote for a Republican, and that's plain and simple.
Mark, weigh in on this. What do you think happened in that state? Massachusetts, another blue state that elected a red guy.
Yeah, it's harder for me to explain Illinois than Massachusetts. I would have to think that some of the fighting that the caller mentions, you know, when you have a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature, they should be able to work together. And when they don't, people get upset and they want to throw all the bums out. But I can't say that I know enough specifically about Governor Quinn to know what he did right or wrong. I haven't followed it that closely. I was very surprised by what happened in Illinois. I'd be curious, the caller, and I didn't catch your name. Were you
Lisa.
Surprised by what happened?
I wasn't totally surprised. However, my thought was he was not a strong enough Democratic candidate, even though he was the current governor. But you also have to remember the history that he was the lieutenant governor under Blagojevich, okay? He became governor after Blagojevich went to jail, okay?
So do you think that Blagojevich's problems, to put it lightly, did they rubbed off on Pat Quinn?
I don't think so. I don't think so totally, let me put it this way. But he did. The thing is, he came in and Blago, as we affectionately refer to him here, when he went to prison, of course, he maintained his innocence up until the day he was convicted and strutted off to prison in Colorado. To some degree, Quinn has never been a real progressive Democrat in Illinois. Okay? Where when you have powerful leaders in Illinois, of which Mike Madigan is, and John Cullerton is on the other side. You ain't going to fare too well. And I know he did to some extent. They did not agree with him on some things he did because he did some things that they weren't happy with. I mean, let me put it this way. I'm not a super progressive, but I'm more progressive than Quinn was and will ever be.
Yeah, and I think the people of Illinois are as well. Lisa, thank you for the call. We have a few more calls to get to before the end of the hour mark. Let's go next to Reggie in Georgia, line 3. Hi, Reggie. Good afternoon. Quickly, I know you didn't vote, so I don't know what you're really going to be able to say.
Well, I'd just like to know, how do we get out in front of these Republican lies before they get all over the media?
Vote! Reggie, you got to vote, not just you. And I understand you had transportation issues or whatever, but hey, people have to vote. Democrats didn't get out and vote. Mark, you agree with me on that?
2/3 stayed home, and the vast majority did not have the issues that you had. And so, you know, I'm upset, but I'm also upset with my own people. We got to vote.
Exactly. Let's go to Dean in Buffalo, line 5. Dean, quickly.
All right. Thanks for having me on. I always enjoy talking with you guys. You know, if there's one good thing that came out of the debacle that made McConnell the face of the Senate, it's that both of these guys, McConnell and Obama, seem to like and respect one another. And I honestly do believe that they will be willing to work together.
Well, you know what, Mark, thank you, Dean. Mark, you tell me, that's all for show, isn't it? Everybody loves and likes and respects.
Dean, I hope you're right. I really do hope you're right. I fear you're wrong. I really don't think much is going to get accomplished in 2 years, but I hope you are right and everyone proves me wrong. Nothing could make me happier.
Michael in the Bronx, line 2. One sentence. Go.
Let this be a lesson that every year get out and vote, no matter how big or how small it is. And Republicans, you are now on notice. You wanted to be in charge. Now do something, damn it.
Thank you for that. Mark, just
good line.
Very good. Very good line, Michael. Proud of you. You did a great job. Mark, very quickly, this is Republicans to screw up because America's going to watch and blame them.
I hope so.
And this will bode well, what everybody's saying right now, for Hillary in 2016, correct?
I sure hope so, and I want to see Hillary front and center now. I think Obama's stage, he's got 2 years, but let's see Hillary start talking a lot
absolutely.
More.
And by the way, unless Ebola's wiped out, ISIS is wiped out, unemployment's wiped out, and you all have new jobs and tons of money, you got to vote the Republicans out. I'm Leslie Marshall. We'll be back.